On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I are joined by Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors to preview the Nets' first round playoff series against Toronto. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Barahal. As I mentioned up top, we are going to get into a full preview of the Nets-Raptors series with Sean Woodley coming up in the next couple of segments. We've also got another great guest lined up that we're planning to record with over the weekend. That'll be up on Monday before the Nets game one against the Raptors at 4 p.m. But in the meantime, wanted to quickly talk to you guys about the close game that happened last night between the Nets and the Trailblazers just for a minute or two before we get into it with Sean. This was a wild game, wild performance from Caris LeVert, who put up 37 points and 9 assists. Joe Harris, once again, 19 points. Really efficient game from him. Jarrett Allen, 14, 11, and 4 with 3 blocks. Kind of a classic Jarrett Allen stat line in the bubble. He also chipped in with a ton of offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter. He had 6 of them for the game, just giving the Nets opportunity after opportunity. And the biggest takeaway from this, for me at least, was just how hard the Nets played in this game that meant literally nothing to them. They're locked into seventh. They can't move up or down. It's not like they get like a different draft pick if the Blazers win versus if they lose kind of thing. There's really no stakes for them whatsoever. And they came out and competed hard from the jump. They led at points in this game in the fourth quarter. They had built up a decent lead. They led by, I think, 10 at one point after a really strong third quarter where they outscored Portland 37-24. And this is just another notch in the belt for Jacques Vaughn, who, again, the Nets didn't win this game, but they competed really hard against a team that a lot of people have pegged as one of the most dangerous teams in the Western Conference playoff race. Like, it goes, the Lakers and the Clippers are 1-2 in some order in terms of teams you don't want to face. The Blazers are in the conversation for third. I know that they're like barely getting into the play-in game for the 8th seed, but they had a lot of injuries, and this team right now obviously completely different. So a great showing from the Nets, and Damian Lillard exploded, 42 points, 12 assists. That was actually holding him in check relative to his last couple games where he put up 51 and 61 points in those last two. So I thought the Nets did actually a really nice job defensively against him to limit him to just 22 shot attempts. I mean, he was making pretty much everything he put up. He was 8 of 14 from 3, 13 of 22 overall. But to kind of force the ball out of his hands to make guys like Gary Trent Jr. take 13 shots, CJ McCollum playing through an injury to take 21 shots, Yusuf Nurkic took 17 shots. Like, the Nets did a good job of making Portland spread the ball around. That's one thing that we didn't totally get into in this Raptor preview that I want to touch on right now, is that this Nets defense does a really nice job of, when they're going up against like one star player, kind of forcing the ball out of that guy's hands. We saw it in the Bucks game when they were able to limit Giannis in that first half that he played. And in this Blazer game, they did a nice job of keeping the ball out of Damian Lillard's hands. The problem with this matchup against Toronto is that the Raptors don't really have that one guy who you want to slow down and who's like the key to the series. You know, they spread it around. It could be Van Vliet one night, could be Lowry the next, Siakam the one after that, and maybe a guy off the bench, maybe Norm Powell, maybe OG Anunoby. Like, they have a lot of guys who could explode on any given night, which is going to make it tough for this Nets defense, which, again, they gave up 134 points, kind of similar to what I talked about in that Bucks game where they gave up a ton of points. But the defense was really good from the Nets' perspective in this game, just because of the offensive juggernaut they were going up against in Damian Lillard and the Portland Trailblazers. So overall, just wanted to say very impressed with that game, and I felt like I didn't want to not talk about it, at least, because that was a wild game. Great to see the Nets get some love on national TV. Caris LeVert was getting a lot of shine. Damian Lillard praised him post-game in his interview with Chris Haynes on the court right after. He called him cold. And LeVert, other than that last shot where he probably should have gone to the basket, just masterful performance from him. Really looking forward to seeing what he can do against the Raptors defense, which, as we'll talk about in these next couple segments, a little bit tougher than the Blazers defense. Before we get into it, with Sean, though, have to tell the listeners about one of our favorite sponsors who is back with us, Built Bar. Yeah, that's right. The improved Built Bar is even more delicious than before. They've got 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. And here are their 6 new ones. Here we go. Caramel Brownie, Cookies and Cream, Cherry Barcia. I'm assuming that's a Cherry Garcia reference, maybe some kind of cherry flavored bar. Lemon Almond Cheesecake, Carrot Cake, Apple Almond Crisp. Come on, these all sound incredible. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and super easy to chew. Built Bar is great for the health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, and they're great if you're on a keto diet. Just go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off on your next order. Once again, use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. All right, and without further ado, here is our crossover with Locked On Raptors host Sean Woodley.
Hey, it's Sean Woodley here from Locked On Raptors, and on the line with me are the two hosts of Locked On Nets, Marcus Barahal and Josh Bass. Marcus, Josh, we got a series to talk about. How's it going, guys?
Going well. Yeah, we do have a series to talk about. Not sure how long the series is going to go, but there will be at least 4 games, so we'll have some stuff to talk about for sure.
Yeah, Sean, I'm a lot happier to be talking to you than I would be talking to Locked On Bucks.
We know one needs to talk to Kane. What are we talking about? We'll leave Kane to we'll talk to him in the conference finals, maybe. or maybe not. Maybe the Nets will pull off the impossible in round one and beat the Raptors. And that's where we should start here. Like, I think the Raptors are kind of the sort of known commodity among these two teams. They won a ton of games this year. They were 6-1 or are 6-1 at the time of recording in the bubble before their last game on Friday against the Denver Nuggets, which means nothing. And they've just kind of been coasting through here ever since they locked up the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference. But the Nets have been new and bizarre and scrappy and all of those fun words after losing basically their entire roster before coming to Florida. It's basically Caris LeVert, Jarrett Allen, and Joe Harris, and then a bunch of ragtag dudes filling out the rest of the lineup. And they have been all right. They've been 5-3. They are just above an even net rating right now at a plus 0.3 over the course of these games. I think much better than anybody expected. They obviously warded off the not at all terrifying Washington Wizards, the 11th place Washington Wizards, which is like my favorite stat of all time now. And they are now in the 7th slot, taking on the Raptors in round one. Josh, let's start with you. What has been the sort of key for the Nets to kind of figure this out and kind of, I don't know, it's weird. Like, I think everyone kind of expected them to be bad. They have been very much respectable. Why have they had some success here in the restart?
Yeah, I mean, Sean, it's been really shocking for, I think, both Marcus and I. I mean, I was basically saying, hey, the Nets could very easily go 1-7 in the bubble, if not 0-8, just because of the complete dearth of talent, which happens when you basically lose 6 of your 7 top 7 guys to injury, COVID, what have you. But I think it starts with the 3 guys you mentioned that kind of are known NBA commodities in Caris LeVert, Jarrett Allen, and Joe Harris playing at a really high level. Because Harris has obviously been very consistent in the last couple years for the Nets, but he's taken it to a whole other level in the bubble with just being kind of a 17-18 point per game scorer. Very good efficiency. And then you have LeVert and Allen, 2 younger players still with a lot to prove, who have shown a ton of potential in their years in the NBA, but a bit more inconsistent, and they've been awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, Allen has been really good in carrying the Nets. Some of the earlier games, LeVert's had some nice moments closing and then went off against the Blazers last night, even though he couldn't hit that last shot. And I think it starts with those 3 guys taking their game to another level, and then it makes everything easier for kind of these fringe NBA guys to fill in, because they're not asked to be, you know, anything more than role players, because there are guys there that can carry the load in some of these lower pressure games.
Marcus, do you have anything else to kind of throw in there?
Yeah, just to add on to that, I think it's kind of been each of those 3 guys like slightly outperforming expectations, and then like all that put together has led to like an improvement in what you've seen on the court. Like LeVert, his efficiency hasn't been great in the bubble, but he's taking on a ton of responsibility passing wise. He's averaging 6.5 assists in the bubble. Joe Harris, obviously always going to be really consistent. He's shooting 62% from the field, though, like not just hitting open threes, but also getting to the basket, finishing inside and kind of using his outside shot to leverage driving lanes and get inside. And then Jared Allen has really picked up his interior passing and his aggressiveness. He's first in screen assists in the whole league in the bubble, just really playing with much more force and aggression inside. Like Josh said, it starts with those three guys, but then off the bench, they've kind of gotten some contributions from a little bit more obscure guys. Timotei Luau-Cabarrot has played really well. Rodions Kurucs has been a little bit more consistent than he had been this season after having a pretty successful rookie year. So they've got a little bit of, like, no one is kind of like just like taken over completely. It's kind of been everyone stepping up a little bit in their roles. And for that reason, Jacques Vaughn deserves a ton of credit. The head coach, 7-3 since he took over for Kenny Atkinson before the shutdown. And he, I think, has been kind of just like the guiding light, kind of steering the ship towards respectability, like you said.
Yeah, that's my next question. First of all, to note that there is still time for Jamal Crawford to take over and become that sort of overwhelming force in this team. I'm hoping for it, and I fully expect a game one between the Raptors and Nets potentially to swing on Jamal Crawford dropping like 45 and winning the game, because game ones are hell for the Raptors, obviously. In terms of Jacques Vaughn, I want to ask about him, because like he was kind of a joke coach for the Orlando Magic. Everyone was like, oh yeah, he's probably the worst coach in the league. And then they bring him in after this sort of weirdly timed firing of Kenny Atkinson right before the shutdown takes place. And he only gets a couple of games. You mentioned he's 7-3, so that leaves, what, two games before everything got shut down for him to get accustomed to the team. And then it's an entirely new team for him to work with. Maybe this is a question for beyond the playoffs, but Josh, let's go to you. I mean, is there a chance that Jacques Vaughn has kind of worked himself into contention to just have this job going forward, or is he still kind of a lame duck, as you assume KD and Kyrie are probably going to have quite a bit of say in who the coach ends up being?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so tough. I hope at least KD and Kyrie are, you know, at home watching the bubble and, you know, really just jazzed up about the success of the Nets and how hard they've been playing under Jacques Vaughn. But, you know, they are superstar players, mercurial ones at that, and will kind of exert their will however they see fit. And they may want kind of a bigger name coach, whether it's, you know, Mark Jackson, who I think would be a terrible idea, Kidd, who I think would be a terrible idea, Ty Lue, who I think would be probably one of the better options, which is saying a lot about the Nets' choices. So the one thing about Jacques Vaughn, though, is I think he's done an amazing job with this Nets team, and whether he gets the Nets job next year or not, I think he's put himself in a position to get a job. Because as you mentioned, Sean, his tenure with Orlando was so bad, it was pretty likely that he might never get, you know, a full-time gig in the NBA. And I think the one thing you can say is that there's going to be a lot of teams here who have seen what he's done with a rebuilding group and might say, you know, he could be a good coach to lead kind of some of these younger players that another team might have and develop them and empower them. So I think he's setting himself well up for a potential job in the next year or two. It might just not be this next one, given team dynamics.
Totally. That makes a lot of sense. You know, Marcus, let me just sort of throw one more to you. So in terms of the Raptors matchup, obviously they are outgunned in terms of overall talent, in terms of resume this season. Is there sort of someone on the Nets, if you're looking at this series and the Nets make it a series, whether they lose in six or a very close five, or hey, maybe they pull out the miracle and win it, who is the most responsible for that on the team? Is it as simple as Caris LeVert just because he has the ball in his hands all the time? Is there somebody else who's kind of the most impactful, maybe under the radar type of guy who keeps his team afloat? Maybe it's in minutes where the bench is in and like there's a real risk of falling off, but someone's been pretty good in those minutes. What's the sort of the key player, if the Nets are to make some sort of hay in this series, is there someone in particular who you look back and say, oh, that dude went off and that's why?
Yeah, I think in terms of like an under the radar guy, I think it probably is Kurucs. The team coming into the bubble, they started Lance Thomas at power forward in the first game, which did not pan out particularly well. Rhodey is a guy who in his rookie year, he was not expected to really do anything and then kind of came out of nowhere, really active on both ends of the floor, good size. They've been playing him a little bit at the backup five, but he's more so a power forward. And so defensively, if he can kind of like limit Siakam and cut down what he can do offensively, That paired with the fact that he's basically also the backup center, just because after Jared Allen, it's either him or it's like Dont'a Hall or playing Lance Thomas at the five. So they don't have a ton. They don't have a ton of options in the front court. So really, like, him staying out of foul trouble, him being able to defend Siakam without fouling, and then also on the other end, spacing the floor, kind of helping to push the pace in transition. I know the Raptors' defense has been incredible all season, especially in the bubble, but I think fast break points are kind of the one area, in the bubble at least, where they've struggled somewhat. So him pushing the pace and just kind of like leaking out off steals, like, that's kind of maybe a slight swing factor. Obviously, like you said, the Nets are extremely out-talented, and it's going to take those top three guys that we mentioned kind of playing out of their minds for a few games for the Nets to have much of a chance in the series. But like, beyond them, I think Kurucs is probably the fourth most important guy.
Makes a lot of sense. We're going to flip the tables around, and Josh and Marcus are going to grill me about the Raptors in just a second. But before we get to that, a reminder that you can start your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Nyla Bledu and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world on Axios Today. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. All right, guys, grill me. Throw me some Raptors stuff. Let's go. Start with whoever you want. Josh, I don't care. Fire it my way. I'm ready.
Yeah, I think, Sean, you know, I don't want to needle you, but I think I kind of have to do it. You know, we beat you in 07. We beat you in 2014. You guys have the talent advantage now. You're the huge favorite. But, you know, I think it's nice that the Nets and Raptors are playing each other again, because they had some a nice, like, mini rivalry kind of in that 13, 14, 15 era. And then the Nets just unfortunately fell off while the Raptors elevated and became champions. But, you know, is that kind of black and white going to be coming back and haunting you guys? How do you feel about playing us?
Well, so here's the thing. I wanted to play Brooklyn because I'm sick of watching the Magic. like, the Raptors played them last year. They played them in the bubble. They played them like four times to start out this season as well. So it was just like a lot of Magic in a very condensed time frame. So I was rooting for the Nets basically for those reasons, like the weird history between the two teams. Obviously, things are far different now. The Raptors do not have Grievous Vasquez as a significant part of their offense or anything like that. They're a much more mature, a championship season team and all that stuff. But I did kind of like the whole, you know, bring Brooklyn back. I mean, I still, you know, I like you guys. You guys are great. But boy, do I hate the Nets. have I hated the Nets for basically my entire lifetime after they got Vince Carter for absolutely nothing. And like, there's just kind of that seed of hatred kind of boiling ever since 2005 when I was like 12 years old and heartbroken watching Erica and Aaron Williams come in and be the worst players I've ever seen. And so, yeah, it's, you know, dating back to that 2014 series as well. I mean, I'm not as worried because Joe Johnson and Marcus Thornton are not on this team. And if they were, maybe that would be an issue. But yeah, I think I'm not worried about the series, but like far more intrigued by the Nets matchup than I ever was with the Magic for a second time in a row. And that is sort of the going take here. I do think we saw, I think last night, especially as we record this on Friday morning, we saw last night the Blazers and Nets game, which I think everybody in the world was watching apparently, and it was super duper fun. And a lot of Raptors fans were getting Raptors fanny, like pre-championship Raptors fanny, where there's like panic and you're talking yourself into losing to a very, very inferior opponent. And I'm just like, come on, we're past that. Like, Raptors fans don't need to worry about this series. You know, I will get to it later, but my prediction does not have this series going to, you know, particularly long. And as good as Caris LeVert is, if he's the best player on the other team that you're looking across against, like, the Raptors have no reason to fear that. Raptors fans have no reason to fear that, but Raptors fans will fear it because game one's of the boogeyman and the first round has been a bit of fraught territory in years prior to last year. So I think it's a fun matchup. It's something that people wanted, but, you know, I'm sure there will be some Raptors fans who drive themselves crazy thinking about, oh no, what if Joe Harris goes off for 35 and lose game one, and then what happens?
Yeah, I think the Raptors don't really have a ton to be concerned about in this first round matchup. Like, we talked about, their defense has been incredible. Van Vliet and Lowry are both top five in deflections in the bubble, just kind of showing like how active they are. But the one area where they've struggled, at least in this restart, is like on the offensive end and in like half court offense. Siakam hasn't shot it well. Lowry hasn't shot it well from the field. Is that something that concerns you in this series, or is that more of like a long-term thing, or is it something that you're like, it's just a small sample size, like they'll figure it out?
Yeah, it doesn't concern me in this series just because I don't think the Nets are going to be able to score at any sort of rate on the Raptors' half-court defense to sort of make up for any shortcomings they may have on their own offensive end. I do think, like, down the line, that is going to be, if there's something that undoes this Raptors team, it'll be their sort of sometimes sticky half-court offense. The Celtics, I think, did a very good job, obviously, in the game where they beat them by like 4,000 points of shutting down the Raptors' half-court attack. And the Bucks' half-court defense is ironclad. And so if you can't get on the run, which is what the Raptors do best, like, I mean, they run with the top teams in the league, and they're deadly efficient when they get out on the break. If you can't sort of get a game in that sort of back-and-forth rhythm, then yeah, there's the chance that you kind of bog down a little bit. They are always going to be saved by the fact that their defense is also incredible, right? And so I don't think they're ever going to, you know, go on a run where they don't score on 10 straight possessions but lose touch in a game, just because their defense will probably stop the other team from scoring on 7 of the 10 possessions the other way. It's just a matter of, you know, can they just grease enough out of that offense? And there's some signs of hope, I think, that, you know, this has been a really good crunch time team. They've been amazing late in games. I believe they had the number 2 crunch time offense in the season before the pause. And that was all due to like the Kyle Lowry, Pascal Siakam pick and roll, which they really only bust out when it matters most. And that's basically an instant bucket for either one of those two guys. You know, either you get Lowry going downhill to the rim, and, you know, teams are scared about Siakam popping. Either you get Siakam sort of rolling to the free throw line and knocking down a mid-range jumper on the pop. You get him knocking down a pick-and-pop three. Like, or you get Siakam going downhill and he just, like, walks to the basket in 2 steps and scores. That's kind of been their go-to pet play late in games, and it's worked incredibly well. And so if they can kind of work that in a little bit more, you have Marc Gasol, who seems healthy and looks to be more of an active participant in the offense, and there's not, like, a bad shooter anywhere on the floor, I think they can be good enough. And, you know, again, it's going to be a coin flip series against Boston, probably. They still are the underdogs against Milwaukee, but I think there's enough signs of optimism when it matters most that they can kind of just scrape by. Well, yeah, it's certainly, of all the concerns with the team, that is one of them. I should also note, like, Pascal Siakam, I still think, is kind of rounding into form. He was cooped up in his condo for the entirety of quarantine, basically, in Toronto. He didn't have a court. He, you know, didn't really shoot a ball for, like, 4 straight months. And so I still think there's some rust being worked out there. And his defense is so good that it's not like a DeMar DeRozan situation. If you recall, you know, when DeMar would struggle offensively, he was giving you nothing on the defensive end, and you basically had to bench him. Whereas with Pascal, yeah, maybe he shoots, like, 4 of 12 in a game, but he's also probably made like 6 incredible closeouts to the corner and grabbed a couple steals and had a couple impressive blocks and is rebounding for you and sometimes running your offense for you. So he's still not a complete zero, even if his offense is a little bit, you know, shaky on a given night. So yeah, there are some concerns for sure. This is not a perfect team by any means, and they could very well lose in the second round of Boston. And I don't think Raptors fans, you know, they wouldn't be thrilled by it, but also it's like, how can you really be mad after what's happened over the last year and a half, 2 years? There's like, they're kind of playing with house money at this point, either way.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, there's just so few holes. Like, the only real weakness on defense is the fast break. Like I said, they've kind of turned it over a little bit, been a little sloppy. Is that just kind of like these games not really mattering, or is there like a real issue there?
I don't think the turnovers are much of a problem. I mean, they were a little bit higher in turnovers this year, and I think last year as well, as they kind of brought in a more motion-heavy offense. They were always like bottom of the league in turnovers. You know, they were giving it away like 9 times a game at times during the DeMar era, just because they ran so much ISO, and that's a low turnover style of play. They, you know, they run a little bit more motion stuff. They get a little bit more risky with things now. Lots of outlet passes and things like that as they try to get their fast break going. And sometimes that goes awry. But Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry are really good at taking care of the ball. Pascal, you know, has been a little bit turnover prone so far in the bubble, but was really kind of rounding into form near the stop in March, where he, you know, was kind of the assist to turnover numbers were really kind of going in the proper direction by the time things slowed down. And they are, you know, again, when things get really tight, they do play a pretty sort of like standard, all right, we're just going to run a high pick and roll style of play. And that kind of keeps the ball a little bit more protected too than, say, you know, running a bunch of pin downs and things like that and trying to find an open look with a lot of off ball action that can sometimes lead to plays getting broken up. So not terribly concerned. you know, again, if things continue the way they were in the bubble, then maybe that becomes a problem. I also think you have to point to the lack of urgency they probably had during the bubble. I mean, they were not going to lose the two seed regardless. And, you know, they've spent the last couple of games just kind of screwing around with fun bench lineups. And, like, you had DeJuan Hernandez.
They're still 6-1.
Like, exactly, yeah. I mean, you had, like, DeJuan Hernandez and Paul Watson leading a comeback. You probably don't even know who those two dudes are leading a comeback against the Sixers bench on Wednesday while the starters were all just, like, straddling the video board and celebrating. It's been fun for sure, but it's been notably low stakes for the Raptors so far. And I feel like considering their sort of seasoning in last year's championship run, they're probably just kind of ready for playoff basketball to kick in. And I would imagine they'll sort of, you know, firm up the edges a little bit once the playoffs get going. Speaking of which, should we maybe get into our series predictions here, guys, and sort of look at the matchup? Again, it's not like a terribly compelling matchup considering the talent disparity here, just the overall resume of this season, but maybe we just go around the horn, sort of talk about some interesting matchups and maybe drop a prediction. Josh, let's start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably have to go Raptors in five, and I think there's a couple different, you know, things that I'm looking at here is that the Nets, especially in crunch time, it's going to be the LeVert show. Mm-hmm. And the Raptors are such a poor matchup in that sense is that they have so many different guys that they can throw at LeVert, whether it's Lowry or Van Fleet. You kind of go with a smaller guard that might be able to get up into him and pressure him. Bigger guys that he's just going to struggle to get around because they have size and quickness, and Pascal or OG, you know, if it's RHJ, if he somehow gets on the floor during this, just if Nick Nurse wants to taunt the Nets, I think they're going to have a hard time scoring. And then when you look at the Raptors, the huge edge that they have is that they have some really nice stretch bigs, mm-hmm. whether it's Gasol, Ibaka, even Chris Boucher. And especially when Jarrett Allen's on the floor, he sometimes does struggle getting out on the perimeter. And then if he is able to get out on the perimeter, the Nets perimeter defense is just so bad that the Raptors are going to have easy driving lanes and uncontested layups. Really, the Raptors are probably the worst matchup for the Nets in the sense that they're so balanced. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be tough for the Nets team to overcome that talent deficit and just lack of depth that they have. So, you know, I love the way that Jacques has the Nets playing, so I'll give them a game. But besides that, have to go Raptors in five.
Marcus?
Yeah, I'm agreeing Raptors in five. And I think, Josh, what you said about like the game down the stretch and like it turning into the Kara show, I think that's a good point. And I think that the way that the Nets can win a game is if they kind of catch Toronto by surprise in the first half and like build up a lead and then are able to like hold off the Raptors and keep it at like an 8-12 point deficit in the fourth quarter. I think if it gets close down the stretch, Toronto can just like really clamp them down and shut everything down. Yeah, I mentioned the Kuroks Siakam matchup. I think that'll be interesting. Also, the backcourt, the Nets are starting Caris LeVert and Garrett Temple. Obviously, like, bigger players than Van Vliet and Lowry in terms of size, but really like not much of a comparison, even like in terms of defensive toughness. But what the size does allow them to do is kind of switch one through four with those two guys, Joe Harris and Kuroks, all kind of being able to somewhat defend everyone on the Raptors besides whoever they're playing at center at the time. So I think that'll be interesting to see maybe the Nets do more switching. They've played zone at times defensively, so Jacques Vaughn definitely likes to mix things up on that side of the court. Maybe they can slow the Raptors down, but in the end, definitely agree with Josh. I got Raptors in five.
Yeah, I have Raptors in four. Maybe this is, you know, still latent championship arrogance just kind of floating through my veins right now. But I look at this matchup and I think like the Raptors just kind of have trump cards everywhere, right? I think the thing that you look at for the Nets to say, hey, they can take a game is just they shoot a bazillion threes. That's very much their identity. And when they do that, I mean, the high variance thing kicks in, right? I think they beat the Raptors in a game this year because they hit a million threes and the Raptors didn't hit any, if I recall. And that ended the 15-game winning streak, if I'm remembering correctly. And so, you know, they always have that potential as a team that sort of compensates for their lack of overall talent by just jacking a ton of threes and trying to win the math battle. And so that's certainly a possibility. I think, you know, it's going to be an interesting conundrum for the Raptors, right? Because they've kind of played this star-killing defense all season long where they'll send two guys to a star and just sort of funnel threes to the less apt shooters on the floor. And, you know, the Nets kind of always have shooters out there, right? You know, Joe Harris is incredible. You know, TLC has been really good as well. He's, what, 45% so far in the bubble. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's kind of hitting their share of threes right now on the Nets. And so I wonder if maybe the Raptors say, all right, maybe it's not worth sending all of our attention Caris LeVert's way, and we just put OG Anunoby on him. And then that is kind of it, because OG is, you know, borderline all defense this season. He's amazing. He can guard guards. He can guard bigs. He can kind of do it all. And I wonder if they just say, all right, OG, you're going to not so much worry about offense in this series. We feel like we'll be able to score otherwise. And you just smother Caris LeVert for whatever length the series is. And that kind of becomes their trump card. I mean, I think because you don't have, you know, terrifying offensive threats in like Garrett Temple and TLC kind of around the perimeter, or Joe Harris even, who, you know, maybe they're more sort of suited to just kind of like shooting open threes. And, you know, Joe Harris can do some stuff off the bounce. I don't want to totally discredit what he's doing. He's averaging 20 a game so far. And like you mentioned, he's shooting the lights out from everywhere. But I feel like you can say, all right, well, Kyle, you guard Joe Harris. Fred VanVleet, you guard Garrett Temple. We throw OG on Caris LeVert, and then we kind of are okay with that. And then the other end, I just don't really see where you can kind of cut off the Raptors from initiating their offense. Even if you throw LeVert and put his size onto a Kyle, then you just kind of give the ball to Fred and he runs the offense, or vice versa if you throw LeVert on VanVleet. And there's just kind of having two very good point guards on the floor creates a lot of matchup problems if you don't have a ton of excellent big wing defenders. And maybe Garrett Temple can hold his own. I just kind of think the Raptors have a little bit too much. And so I am going to say Raptors in four, because why not? Don't underestimate the heart of a champion, all that good stuff. the stuff that we love to tweet and we'll be tweeting and talking about until the Raptors are no longer champions, which, man, it's been nice getting used to the team being champions now for 14 months. I don't want that to go away. But
you had an extra run.
Yeah, it's you know, part of the like the appeal of them maybe not playing the season was, oh yeah, the Raptors are champions for two straight years, and that is a pretty cool thing. They still could be. I don't think it's necessarily the most likely outcome, but the Nets will be an interesting first starting block on their way to potentially repeating their title. Josh, Marcus, this was a lot of fun. This was it was nice to chat. I'm sure we'll chat throughout the series as well. We should just go around the horn and tell people where to find all of our stuff. Josh, let's start with you.
For sure, for sure. Well, most important thing in my life, please go listen to Locked On Nets, and then you can follow myself on Twitter at jmbass_ and the podcast at Locked On Nets. Sean, it was a blast.
Yeah. Marcus, you?
Yeah, same as Josh, and then also I'm at Marcus Barahal, Barahal. Thanks a lot, Sean.
Yeah, of course. You can find me at Woodley Sean. Subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast, Locked On Raptors, as well as Locked On Nets, wherever you get your podcasts. Again, we'll be talking throughout the series, I am sure. And, you know, Raptors fans may not like the Nets or Nets fans, but Josh and Marcus, you're the good ones. And so just soak up all of your Nets content from you guys, and everyone will be happy about that. That's going to do it. Please make sure you're also going to check out the other series crossover previews on the Locked On NBA channel this week, too. And big thanks as well to Built Bar for sponsoring the podcast. And with that, we will talk to you again soon on either Locked On Raptors or Locked On Nets, depending on which feed you're listening to. Have a good one, everybody.